WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. For 20 years, Martin Landau took many movie and TV roles that he didn't much like. When he finally got a challenging role as the businessman hustler Abe Carrots in Francis Ford Coppola's film Tucker, Landau was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. The next year, Woody Allen gave him a part in Crimes and Misdemeanors as a philandering husband who has his mistress murdered when she threatens to tell his wife about their affair. Again, Landau was nominated for an Academy Award. Now he's starring in the new HBO movie By Dawn's Early Light, which premieres this Saturday. He plays the President of the United States, who's trying to avert a full-scale nuclear war with the Soviet Union. Until recently, Landau was best known to the public for his role as a super spy in Mission Impossible. But among actors, he's known for his work with the Actor Studio. The Actor Studio was founded in the late 40s in New York by Ilya Kazan and Lee Strasberg, and has been the training ground for actors such as Marlon Brando, James Dean, Geraldine Page, and Robert De Niro. Landau joined in the early 50s.
That year, 2,000 people auditioned trying to get in, and two were accepted that year. Steve McQueen and I were the only two. And it was tough to get in. It's still tough to get in.
What did you have to do to get in?
Well, I did a scene, a five-minute scene with a partner, not classical, contemporary, a give-and-take scene. You can't do a monologue, and it's still the case. And I did a scene from a play called Clash by Night. Lee Strasberg actually directed it on Broadway with a cast consisting of Lee J. Cobb, Tallulah Bankhead, and Joseph Schildkraut. At any rate, I chose a five-minute scene from that piece. Everyone told me I was crazy because Lee had directed it, and they said there would be no way that he would, agree with what I chose because his closeness to that material. At any rate, the final audition was being judged by Alia Kazan, you know, who directed Streetcar Named Desire and on Broadway and in the movie and on the waterfront and East of Eden and many, many, many things. And Cheryl Crawford, who was a famous Broadway producer and one of the co-founders of the Group Theater, and Lee Strasberg. And you had to get 3-1 votes from all of them. 1, 2, or 3. 3 meant no, 2 meant not bad, come back another time, and 1 meant you were in. And I guess in retrospect it was a bit daring, but Strasberg did give me a 1 vote as well.
So it was you and Steve McQueen who got in of those 2,000 people who auditioned. Were you and Steve McQueen competitive with each other at all as the two newcomers?
Not really, no. Steve was very different physically than I was. I was very lean and very dark and much more ethnic in feel, and Steve was... I think he was much more competitive with a very close friend of mine called Jimmy Dean, James Dean. I was in a different sort of category. Johnny Cassavetes and Sidney Pollack and those kinds of fellows were my competition.
Mm-hmm. You know, you stuck with the Actor Studio as a teacher, right? I mean, when did you start?
Well, I was encouraged by Lee Strasberg to teach as a young actor, which he didn't do with a lot of people.
Oh.
And, you know, over the years, you know, Jack Nicholson had studied with me in the early
50s. You taught him, in other words?
Early 60s.
He was
Jack
a student?
Was my student for 3
mm-hmm.
years, and Harry Dean Stanton, and Warren Oates, and Shirley Knight, and Bruce Geller, who created Mission Impossible. Even recently, Oliver Stone worked with me as an actor about 10 years ago, before he directed his first movie. He had already won the Academy Award as writer for Midnight Express, but he had been signed to direct a film, and the head of the studio, the head of production, called me and said, "Would it be okay if he came into my workshop as an actor?"
You met a lot of actors before they had the screen personas that they're now famous for. For instance, Jack Nicholson, who had been one of your students. Would you have guessed, working with him early on, that he would have become, I don't mean as famous as he is, but that he would have had the kind of persona that we now know him for?
Yes, a lot of that was evident. I mean, it's silly to say that, but it's true. In choosing that particular group of people, there were 16 in all, I saw 200 people, and I spent my time not auditioning them, but talking to them and trying to discourage them from coming into my class, because what I did in the class demanded a certain kind of allegiance and diligence and tenacity and hard work. But I looked for things in the people, and Jack did all the right things wrong and all the wrong things right, which was what I always looked for. Strange. It's hard to say. It's sort of a kinesthetic thing. But I saw a lot of stuff in Jack. And he looked like the boy next door in those days, but there was nothing about the boy next door in his persona.
Martin Landau is my guest, and he stars in the new HBO movie By Dawn's Early Light. Knowing as many actors and directors as you did through the Actors Studio, how do you think that affected your early career, getting roles?
Well, I was always considered very offbeat in those days. I was
for
very,
what reasons?
Very thin.
I'm sorry.
I was very
yeah.
thin,
mm-hmm.
exceedingly thin. If you look at North by Northwest, you'll get a clue.
You were one of the spies in North by Northwest.
Well, yeah, James Mason and I played the two spies, and I was, but very, very lean and very kind of stark-looking. It was a period where you know, plays like Picnic were being done on Broadway, and movie actors looked more like Rock Hudson and Guy Madison and Tab Hunter, and I was, you know, intrinsically a character actor, but not easy to cast because of a very, you know, it was a different time. I mean, there were no, you know, Al Pacino and Dustin Hoffman and Bobby De Niro would also have had a great deal of problem in those days because they would have been considered offbeat, but times change. And I wound up playing many, many bad guys in movies as a result of my looks.
Like what? Which kind of roles are you talking about? Which movies?
Well, all kinds, you know. I mean, gangsters and The Untouchables. I would always be some kind of deadly guy, you know, who would talk like this, you know, very dangerous. And just, you know, Westerns. I mean, if you look at a picture like Nevada Smith, I play a demoniacal killer. That Steve McQueen chases down because my character, along with Arthur Kennedy and Carl Malden, have killed his parents. That's the essence of that film that Henry Hathaway directed. As you know, Hitchcock cast me in North by Northwest, even though he saw me in a picture in a play that in which I didn't play a conventional bad guy, though I was the catalyst in the piece. It was Paddy Chayefsky's first play on Broadway called Middle of the Night. I toured with that, and that brought me to California, and Hitchcock saw me on opening night and had me in mind for North by Northwest as a result of that, though the character was 180 degrees different than the role I played in North by Northwest. So the old guys, I mean, the old, wonderful, imaginative fellows in historically have always had imagination and broken conventional thinking. I mean, even as recently as my being cast in Tucker, I mean, I don't think there's anyone in the world who would have cast me in Tucker other than Fred Roos, who is Francis Coppola's producer, and Francis Coppola. It's not conventional, would not have been conventional thinking on anyone's part, for, you know. In fact, there were people who, after they'd heard I'd been cast in that role, who were involved, were surprised at the casting. But
what would have surprised them about it? I mean, you fit the role so perfectly, seeing the movie.
Well, that's after the fact.
Right, that's after the fact. How was the role?
I mean,
role...
everyone is very quick to jump on
right.
me after the fact in this world. And on the, you know, and I mean, immediately after playing Tucker, there were you know, script after script after script with a lot of very ethnic, mostly Jewish, older men were sent my way. It takes a Woody Allen to think of me as the character I played in Crimes and Misdemeanors. Again, a departure from anything I'd ever done before and anything he'd seen me in before. But it takes those, you know, I'm an actor who's got a very wide range, I mean, much more so than almost anyone I know, in deference to myself. I'm not speaking, you know, egocentrically at all, but I do have a very wide range. I could play a lot of things. And it's hard for people, and logically hard and understandably hard for people to think of me for certain roles.
Let's stick to Tucker for a second. When
sure.
When you read the script for the character of Abe Carrots, the financier, what interested you in the character? And what did you want to bring out in the character?
Well, I just saw lots of layers there. I saw things that, you know, I hadn't had a good movie role in almost 20 years, and I've been waiting for one. I've been playing mindless heavies in empty-headed movies, you know, where if you brought too much dimension to the characters, it wouldn't help the movie. You know, they're action-adventure movies or horror movies, and the kind, you know, the kind of character that wakes up in the morning and says, "I'm a villain. That's what I do professionally. I'm going to be mean today." And that's, you know, there aren't really people like that. So those are very stylized and very ultimately frustrating. Frustrating in the sense that those were one-dimensional characters, and that's all I was getting. But I was somewhat frustrated, and my creativity was being thwarted. But I kept my, you know, sanity in a sense, and waited for a good role. And when I read that script, it just jumped off the page and grabbed me and hugged me, and I just embraced it. And I knew that could be the role that could break through for me. So Coppola and I had an hour and a half meeting in which Francis thought, you know, in our early exchange at that meeting, felt I was too young and too tall. And I said, "Don't worry about it. We have 2 weeks of rehearsal." And during those 2 weeks, I got a little older and a little shorter every day.
How did you get older and shorter every day? Was it in the posture, stooping?
Well,
over?
You have to look at Jeff Bridges and I are the same height. So check out the movie. It's hard to explain.
I was actually screening it again last night at home on video, and you're not standing up straight most of the time. Like, by the middle of your back, you're starting to stoop a little bit.
It's a certain kind of posture because of the certain kind of man he is.
Right, right.
You see, I have a fine arts background, and I saw Abe in a particular way. So I drew the character, this kind of hairdo that I felt was period, and just out of my recollection when I was a kid, and the kind of mustache and the shape of it. And then with Milena Cananero, chose very carefully the suits. My character wears a lot of different suits, but they're all brown, excepting in one sequence where the cars unveil, where he wears gray, and it's a sort of a festive thing, which counters the, you know. They're all different brown suits. I just felt the character was brown, and carefully chose the ties with Helena. And we sometimes would argue over things, so what I'm saying, basically, it was a collaboration. While I was working on the insides of the character, I was also working on the outsides of the character.
Mm-hmm. You have received Academy Award nominations both for Tucker and for your role in Woody Allen's movie, Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Yes.
Now, you had told us that it was like 20 years since you'd gotten like a really good movie role.
That's right.
How did you feel to, like, in the mind of the public, you know, and some people in Hollywood, to kind of go overnight from being the guy who played the heavy all the time in movies to suddenly being this, you know, venerated actor? You know?
Well, it's you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, among actors over the years, I've always had a great deal of respect from them as a director, as an actor,
as a teacher.
So, I mean, it's something that they've always said to me, "What's wrong with the business?" You know, I mean, I know a number of actors, for instance, personally, who should be doing much more work than they are doing because they're awfully good. But I work with a lot of the great directors when I first came to Hollywood with a reputation as a good New York actor, theater actor, live television actor. So that seemed to have been curtailed by my quote-unquote success on Mission Impossible, where suddenly I became super spy and, you know...
So you feel in a way that Mission Impossible hurt your career?
Well, it helped
afterwards.
Me in many ways, mm-hmm. and it hurt me in other ways.
Yeah.
But I think there are always, when somebody gives you something for a headache, there are sometimes side effects. You get an upset stomach.
Right.
I got a chance to play almost a one-man rep company. Everything from Adolf Hitler to Martin Bormann, to myself, blonde and young, 10 years younger, to all kinds of different dialects and accents and the like, you know. And the Middle European people and crazy, all kinds of things, if you know what I'm saying, my dear.
You were the master of disguises on the show.
That's right, a man of a thousand face.
Let me ask you about Crimes and Misdemeanors, and this movie's about to come out on videotape.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I think it's going to be released the 24th of May, next week.
Did Woody Allen or one of his people call you and say, "We want you for the role," or did you have to audition for it?
No, what happened was I got a call. saying that Woody was interested in me for a role. And I said, well, is there a script? And then, which was greeted with laughter on the other side of the telephone, because, I mean, Woody doesn't, you know, I mean, most of the time the actors don't read the whole script. No one reads the whole script except Woody and maybe Mia and the casting director. So, but I was then told that it would be worth my while to fly into New York, so I did. But prior to it, I also went out and did a little homework, because I, reading a script and seeing a movie are two different experiences. So I went out to Samuel French, which is a theatrical bookstore here in Los Angeles and New York as well, and got eight of his screenplays. So when I met with Woody and we talked, he then gave me the script, which was unusual, I found out afterwards, to read in the hotel room, which I did. So it was the ninth screenplay of Woody's that I read in 4 days, and it was the best one. And it was one of those times when your heart starts beating faster and adrenaline starts flowing. First of all, it was the biggest male role he'd ever written outside of the Woody Allen character, because his protagonists generally have been women. Diane Keaton, Mia Farrow, even recently Jenna Rollins, mm-hmm. Geraldine Page, and Interiors. So he'd never really written a big male character that wasn't played by Woody.
Why did he feel that you needed to read the whole script?
Because there was no way to play that character without knowing everything about that movie, because of the delicacy of it. I mean, it's incredibly delicate thing. You're dealing with a man who's a rich brat of a man, who's a liar, who's a cheat, who's an embezzler, who's a murderer, who's I mean, it is not a redeeming thing he does, and yet the audience has to, you know, from my point of view, and this is what I expressed to Woody, has to empathize and sympathize and join up with him as they're being horrified by what he does. I felt it was essential that the audience see themselves in this character, and that the only way to do that, I mean, the character doesn't do one single thing of redemption in the entire movie. He's an awful person. And I, you know, you could, in this clicker mentality we're living in, where people click things off television in 15 or 20 minutes, it'd be very easy for the audience to say, hey, this guy's a jerk. I don't like him. And you don't have a movie. So how to delicately deal with that, and also, you know, the Claire Bloom character.
Who plays your wife.
Yes, but she doesn't know what it's a very delicate thing. I mean, she knows I'm having some problems, but she doesn't know the degree to which the problems are. I mean, there's a man who's having a major breakdown, a nervous breakdown, on top of the fact that he does something that is among the most heinous things a quote-unquote leading character has ever done.
So does Claire Bloom, when you were acting with Claire Bloom, had she not read the part of the script where it's revealed that you were a murderer?
Parts of the script.
So she had no idea what you were really guilty of. She knew something was up. She had no idea what when she was acting.
Well, she just knew that I was, you know, having some business problems, possibly.
Do you think this works? Do you think this is a good way to go about
doing it? Well, it depends. It works with Woody, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't want Angelica to know what kind of life my home life was, because I don't let her in on that. So Angelica's character was not privy to that part of the story. Joanna Gleason, who plays Woody's wife in the film, felt it was a very good way to go, because it gave her enormous freedom. She felt she could do anything within that. She understood the relationship, but she didn't know what else was going on in the movie, and that Woody would ask for something if she, in fact, wasn't giving it. You know, a lot of times actors are bogged down by obligation. An actor knows much more about a character than the character knows about himself. And to know everything there is about a character consciously may not enable you to play the character necessarily. It's what motivates you unconsciously that drives you on. Characters reveal things inadvertently very often, not purposefully. No one walks into a crowded room at a cocktail party filled with strangers and says, "Hello, everybody, I'm embarrassed." That's not something people do. Therefore, people in that condition are trying to do is trying to convince themselves they're relaxed and trying to appear relaxed to other people, when in fact what's going on is contrary to that. So the actor has to create the degree of unrest and then try to cover it.
What was Woody Allen's style of directing you?
Giving me a lot of freedom. But then he's good directors know that Well, Martin Ritt, who's a friend of mine, has, I'm sure other people have said it, but I've heard Marty say that 90% of directing is casting. And if you cast the right people, open the door and let them go. If you cast the wrong people, you're going to try and make a giraffe out of an elephant. I mean, it's impossible. So Francis, too, Coppola as well. I mean, Francis, I walk up to Francis and I'd say, Francis, I can play this scene 10 different ways. And he'd look at me, he'd say, pick the best one and walk away. So, Hitchcock, all of the good ones really give you a great deal of room to create. That's why you've got the part. I mean, that you're going to bring stuff to it. I mean, no one can tell you what to do. I mean, you're in a sense helping them, and they in turn are helping you to illuminate what's there. And if you understand it, and you can play with it and explore and.
Now that you've proven your talent and versatility.
Well, I don't know if I've proven it. I'm working at it.
Right. Well, are you getting the kinds of roles offered to you on a more frequent basis than you have before? I mean, what's happening?
Absolutely. I'm getting great things offered me. And my big dilemma at the moment is to decide what to do so that I can do several of these good ones, because a lot of them overlap. And what I'm trying to do at the moment is make it work so I can do a couple of them as opposed to just one of them.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Martin Landau, and he was nominated for Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his roles in Crimes and Misdemeanors and Tucker. He plays the President of the United States in a new HBO movie called By Dawn's Early Light, which premieres this Saturday. Crimes and Misdemeanors will come out on video next week. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.